Welcome to the program, everyone. Citizen Experience. It's my guest today. I'm very excited to have. She's really enthusiastic about the Hub Zone program, and I want to educate our listeners on what exactly is a Hub Zone certification, what types of businesses leverage the Hub Zone certification, and how it's utilized. So today's guest is Michelle Burnett. She is the executive director of the Hub Zone Contractors National Council. So welcome, Michelle. How are you?
I'm doing good, and I'm so happy to be here. And I apologize in advance for my inability to understand technical capabilities. So a good thing that there are many bright Hub Zone companies out there that can help me navigate this traditionally. Unfortunately, they were not with me this morning. So so much for allowing me to be here and to share some information about the Hub Zone program. I'm a talker, so at any point in time, you might just have to chime in and be like, whoa, whoa.
that's why I have you here. So Michelle, tell us a little about your background and how you got involved in such a important program. But first, just say what for our listeners, what is a Hub Zone certification?
So the Hub Zone program stands for Historically Underutilized Business Zones, and it was created under the sponsorship of Senator Kit Bond in order to bridge the gap due to the fall of the manufacturing industry. So it was originally endorsed in 1997 because we had excessive amount of job losses that were going overseas. So in these remote regions, so as I mentioned, it's underutilized areas. It's areas that are impacted by high unemployment, low median income. It's about targeting resources and support to the areas that need it the most. It is the only small business program that is based on the geographic region, unlike the other programs, which are based on their identity, such as the women-owned program, the veteran-owned program, and even 8A, because 8A is about disadvantaged individuals, and it's all about the owner status. Hub Zone is about the development of a community, and it's to incentivize businesses to relocate their companies into these economically distressed areas, because what are you going to do when you locate a business there? You're going to hire employees. And when people have disposable income, what do? They spend money in that community. So the whole premise of the Hub Zone program is built on the multiplier effect.
And that's a good point, right? So as you see right now, our listeners may not be aware of this, but the point is really trying to get the community out of the Hub Zone, right? To enrich the community so it doesn't qualify for it. Exactly. So in your work, I know you've seen, you're heavily vested in this. So have you seen any real impacts where it really actually changed communities? And tell our listeners a little bit about that.
Absolutely. And I'm going to use myself as an example. My parents are government contractors. I'm frequently asked, why are you so passionate about the Hub Zone program? Because I've seen it work. I started working in the Hub Zone program when I was 20 years old. I got my parents had actually the contract, and I started off on the help desk, the level. And honestly, the first week I got pulled off the phones because this was during the time that the Hub Zone program was going under this big GAO audit. And files had kind of been stopped because they realized in 2008, like maybe just letting people check a box to say that they're qualified wasn't working because it got the program riddled with fraud, waste, and abuse. So SBA came out, and in 2008, there was like a complete audit. They initiated an application process. And, you know, a lot of times people ask the question, you know, why is the Hub Zone program the one that struggled to meet its socioeconomic goals? Well, until just recently, it was the only small business program that had a certification process. So unfortunately, we might be having this very same discussion about women-owned and veteran-owned. So, but, you know, to get back to that question is I started off the first week on the phone. Somebody goes, man, this is taking forever. Should I call my congressman? And I'm like, yeah, that'll get them going. That's a good idea. Good to self. That is not what SBA wants you to say when you're a contractor for them. So needless to say, there was some grooming that was going on. But as you guys will tell in this podcast, I'm a talker. And during the conversations, I got to know these companies. I got to hear about, because I don't believe in hold, if I'm working on something, I'm, what's going on? What are you doing in your community? And I just, time and time again, I talked to these businesses and I found about like how engaged they were in the community. Not because they had to be, but it's just because of who they were. And constantly I've been connected with these individuals that just you know, gave me purpose. So for years I worked on the help desk, and when I closed out the contract, I was actually selected by the director herself, because we were having to transition people off the contract because they had to insource it. They were no longer going to be able to have contractors. So I got to close it out as a PM. So I really got to dabble in every area of the HubZone program and get a really strong grasp of it. And when our contract ended, I was voluntold to assist the HubZone Council, because at the time, you know, we were very actively involved. And for years, I just stayed very connected to the program because it made sense to me. The HubZone program wasn't about any one individual. It was about taking like-minded individuals and getting them to invest in an area that needed it. And that made sense to me. And I personally live in a HubZone area, and I've seen what it's done for my own community. You know, my parents, they were government contractors. They relocated their company to a HubZone area, but they gave back. They've donated to the hospitals. Like, when their company was successful, the entire community benefited. And that's not something that just they did. I've met thousands of companies that have very similar programs, such as Tracy with Tevet. Like, when he had to relocate his business because an area was losing its status, he literally bought a bus to make sure that his employees could still come to work because he was that invested. And right. If you look down, we actually launched a digital magazine because over the last couple years, we've gotten so focused on meeting a goal. Everybody goes, well, they didn't meet their HubZone goal. I said, okay, let's get away from this whole goal thing. Like, let's remember why the Small Business Act was created in the first.
I agree. Yeah.
Word goal, because it doesn't matter if you meet a goal, if there's not more companies getting contract awards. It doesn't matter if you meet a goal, if there's not more jobs being created, because the objective of these programs is distribution of wealth, economic growth, and job creation. And if that is not what's happening based on a direct correlation, we didn't meet anything. So I want to go back from that perspective. And as you're going to notice in this conversation, super ADD, but this program has helped a lot of these communities when it's done right. But it's very important that when we're developing acquisition strategies for the HubZone program, that we consider contract performance location. Right. When we had the SBA contract, and I was able to do the work from a HubZone area. But initially, they wanted all the work to be done in D.C. So, you know, we fought and explained that, hey, this can be done here, and we proved it. But that's a big uphill battle. Like, we need to get more of the dollars out of these decentralized areas and into these communities. And the one positive thing that could potentially come out of COVID, because obviously it's wreaked havoc on our economy, is it proved that, you know, a lot of this work can be done from different regions. You know, we've really stepped up our game with using technology. But essentially, the HubZone program can be very an effective tool in facilitating job creation, economic growth in these communities, if is implemented and used like it's supposed to be.
So I have a question for you. So you have an area of the country, geographic location. What are the measures that the SBA uses to say, okay, this is a HubZone because of population, gross income? What are the factors that says this area is a hub zone?
So that's actually a really good question, because there's quite a few variables that qualify an area as a qualified. Mm-hmm. So you have metropolitan areas and non-metropolitan areas. So the statute which defines these areas does differentiate. So when we think about metropolitan, we're thinking of like urban areas, cities, things with a population over a certain metrics. And mm-hmm. The areas would have to be a certain percentage either of unemployment or median family income. Okay. Mm-hmm. So it's basically an income-based component or unemployment. The issue with metropolitan counties, and this might come out a little bit confusing actually. Let me explain the other ones and I'll write back, because there's a very point, like there's a very important notion that I wanted to bring up. So we have non-metropolitan counties, which is an entire county. And again, certain percentage of median family income or unemployment has to be met in order for a non-metropolitan county. And I'll give you guys the exact statistics, but there's a lot of nuances that go into it that makes it a little bit more confusing just to say flat out. But in addition to areas that could be in metropolitan, like either census tracts or non-metropolitan counties, we have federally recognized tribal land. So all federally recognized tribal land is considered a hub zone. So that's really great. And it cannot lose its status. Then you also have governor designation areas, which is something that was new that just recently came out, which gave a little bit of flexibility. And then you have disaster areas and BRAC closures. So there is components that have, like, you know, a little bit of wiggle room where those things are changing more frequently. So, but the bulk of qualified areas is those ones that are considered low median income in metropolitan or non-metropolitan counties. And where I want to point out is one of the big things that the Hub Zone Council was instrumental in securing was under the NDAA. And this is kind of, I'm not sure how many people might be familiar with. In 2019, SBA went through one of the biggest overhauls in the program. There was a significant number of changes, but that stemmed from the Hub Zone Council securing language under the 2016 NDAA. And what that language really started with is because there was hundreds of counties. Well, it was actually 2018 NDAA. I apologize with that. 2018 NDAA. There was hundreds of counties, non-metropolitan counties, that were going to lose their Hub Zone status, not because the areas had improved, but because of, you know, just the way that they were doing the algorithm. An easy way to explain it is they were comparing the poor to the poor. So you would have states
so that it's a relative to each other type of thing. Okay.
For instance, like West Virginia versus Maryland, if you were doing it towards a national average, that average gets skewed. So you could have certain states that would have zero non-metropolitan counties, because of the fact that in areas and adjacent areas were far worse off. But if you think about it, you know, individual states, the cost of living, and there's a lot of variables that heavily impact that. So what they had to do is they had to compare the non-metropolitan income based onto the state versus the national, because that was like really skewing these results. And because of that change, not only did 142 counties that were at risk of losing their status come back in based on that change, 300 new counties were added to the map. All of these counties that met the statute based on income like levels. So this wasn't like, hey, an anomaly that these areas shouldn't meet the status. Like, they were in desperate need of the economic growth that the Hub Zone program could potentially bring. But because there were so many other areas that were worse off, and that's where the comparison was, these areas were going to lose their status. Now, that is what really drove our initiative and what led to numerous other changes that led to the overhaul in the program. Okay. But I was a huge win because I was a person that was living in a county that was losing its status, not because the area had improved and didn't meet the qualifications. It was more of a technicality based on how they were doing the algorithm. Now, where I wanted to link back is that same sort of technicality is what's impacting a lot of areas in metropolitan communities. So to explain, while there is a certain algorithm that is used based on unemployment and median family income, even if certain areas met that statutory requirement, they could still not qualify for Hub Zone. And the reason for that is because the statute also says no more than 20% of a region, of a metropolitan region, can qualify. And just remember, when HUD, because all of these statutory criteria is based on analysis that is coming from other federal agencies. So for metropolitan communities, that data is being sourced by HUD. And when they determine a metropolitan region, that could be a region in multiple states. Like, so for instance, where I grew up, I grew up in a really small town in West Virginia that was certainly not metropolitan, but it was qualified metropolitan based on its proximity to metropolitan regions in other states. So it wasn't even in the same state. So you could have metropolitan regions that could encompass areas from multiple different states. Okay. And because of that limitation that no more of 20% of those census tracts can qualify, there's a lot of areas that are not getting the benefit of Hub Zone eligibility, not because they don't need it, but because of an erroneous requirement that is put into is based on a statute that has nothing to do with the Hub Zone program. Because again, the Hub Zone program regulations are bound to HUD's regulations. So HUD has that 20% cap because it's based on funding. And that makes sense. You know, we have to make sure that when you're targeting resources and support, it has to be within reason. And that's why that 20% cap's there. But for Hub Zone purposes, putting that 20% cap is a moot point. And in 2000, like when the hurricane hit Puerto Rico, they actually removed the cap, but only for Puerto Rico.
And was that temporary or that?
That is temporary. It is. There's a couple for years that it's added, but what the council is actually currently right now trying to advocate and get legislation introduced to have that 20% cap removed. And if we did, I think the SBA did an analysis, and I believe 16%, it would be a 16% increase in census tracts across, like a 16% increase in, based on the current, the number. So there's a lot of areas that would get added to the map if we were to add that in. So I really hope that Congress does realize, like, hey, this makes sense. And, you know, after COVID and how impacted individuals are, let's throw everybody a bone and, like, just put them in. They know they meet the qualifications.
Yeah. And that's funny because, well, funny, ironic, because 20% is a obscure number. It's just a, you know, a number, yeah. Right? It doesn't address actual need, right? So let's say the need far exceeds 20. I mean, far exceeds 20. There's no, you know, agility there to adjust that or kind of not be so methodical in the thinking that 20% and that's it. Is there a justification from Congress to say 20% is there's a reason why we're capping it there? A
reason that it's in correlation to HUB zone. See, okay. The reasoning is associated to HUD. So when we determine what areas qualify as hub zones based on, it's being linked to data that's being sourced by HUD. So ironically enough, everybody gets upset when an area is not a hub zone and they, you know, call and say, SBA, like, this should be a hub zone. SBA has zero control over what areas qualify, except for with the governor designations. The governor designation, that new rule that was introduced, that is the only time that SBA is able to have any sort of buy-in and say in adding additional tracks to the map. And even then, there is still specific qualifications for an area to be considered for governor designation. You can't go into some affluent, you know, metropolitan area that is just doing great and then be like, oh, I want that to be a hub zone. Like, it doesn't work that way. Like, there is still parameters on what can qualify for governor designation. And currently right now, the governor designation is more geared towards the rural component. But, you know, I feel like there should be flexibility. Like, if there is, you know, valid evidence to promote that a region is in economic distress and that you're able to produce that documentation, you know, why does it only have to be rural areas? But again, that stuff takes statute. Like, the Hub Zone Council, as you mentioned, I'm the executive director, we're an advocacy organization, because unfortunately, no real change is going to happen without legislative change. So this 20% cap, SBA can't just go in and erroneously say, nope, we want to do it. The only way that they can change is for Congress to say, okay, we believe that the 20% cap is not necessary and let's remove it. So it takes a lot of work and we need, you know, individuals to make their voice heard and let their representatives know that, like, hey, this is important to us. Because I guarantee you there's a lot of people that are struggling to maintain compliance that might have people on their staff right now that should qualify, but don't because of a erroneous number.
So I guess a 2 or 3 part question for that. You've heard of empowerment zones, correct?
Yep.
What's the difference between empowerment zones and hub zones? And then let's say I'm a policymaker or a city manager, county manager from a local perspective, knowing that I'm trying to draw businesses to a location. Is there some correlation or basic partnership, public, private, or even local, federal partnership in identifying local areas of need like that, other than the governor's allocation?
It's really funny because secretly I'm hoping that as we begin working, the Hub Zone Council, fingers crossed that in October we'll be formally, you know, joining, like signing the MOU with Minority Business Development Agency, because there's no question the reach and the support that MBDA has been providing the minority business owners. But when you made that comment about opportunity zones, I actually had a meeting this morning with a mapping specialist, because I always said, you know, the number of areas, there is kind of a direct correlation between hub zones and empowerment zones, opportunity zones, like whatever buzzword we're using for them now.
right. Because I'm sure that's changed since we've got on this call.
So those are also determined by areas that are economically distressed. So In Maryland, I had done an analysis to show the correlation to the number of hub zones and opportunity zones, like how they overlaid. And I feel like it was like almost like 90% of a correlation. Now, it was a while ago when I did it, because I don't know of any current tool that does a direct correlation between hub zones and opportunity zones, but I would love to make one. And I met somebody that I was having a conversation with actually this morning that I said, hey, you know, could we do this? Can we be able to show that correlation? Because I know that there is a component. But to explain the differential, because a lot of times when people speak about them, they speak about them interchangeably. So HubZone is a federal contracting program. It's not about funding. It's not about sources. It's not about tax credit. It's about positioning your business in an area with the understanding that you are allowed to then bid on HubZone set-asides or receive price evaluation preference when bidding an open competition against a large business. Or it also takes into consideration subcontracting opportunities. So it's federal contracting. When you think about like opportunity zones and empowerment zones, there is incentives that are created in order for you to relocate your business there. Now, I would tell anyone to looking at an overlay, if you're, as I mentioned, the whole objective of HubZone is to get you to locate your business into these areas. Mm-hmm. But our business strategy is to figure out areas that have incentives that are going to support you with growing your business. So that would be tax incentives. That would be opportunities. You got to look at the workforce. There's a lot of components that a business has to consider when they figure out where they're going to put their business. So you can't just go into an area with no infrastructure or no plan. So you should definitely look at, hey, is this area an empowerment zone? Is this area, what type of tax credits are available? What's the workforce? How is the OJT? Like, is there community colleges? What resources could help me with growing my business? So having that overlap is absolutely critical, because like, why wouldn't you do that? Like, what, you want to pay more taxes? Like, who wants to?
Yeah, I don't see that line voluntary. at all. But so that's a good point. And our listeners are kind of a hybrid of various business types, right? And, you know, I think you're right. I think if you can do an overlay of an empowerment zone and a hub zone, you can get local tax incentives, and then you can get work with the federal government. Yep. For our listeners, because we have, our firm is IT and management consulting. So KL Scott Associates is a hub certified hub zone. And we're always challenged with making the numbers of getting that 35% employee threshold. So we built some programs to start working with, and this is in its infancy, local colleges to bring in talent that are located in there. So it's a good partnership in order to maintain the in compliance. The one thing I wanted to ask you, though, is for our listeners, what types of businesses are the most successful using the HubZone program? Is it construction? Is it medical? Is it IT? What type of business do you see? This is the blueprint, and it has worked for this type of business.
So when the program was first established, it was perceived to be very blue collar industry, construction and things to that regard. But it has significantly evolved in the last 5 to 10 years, which you're a prime example. Having more IT companies, and that's one of the things that I love hearing about, is that you took the initiative to create a program that gives you lasting resources. And there's a part of me that says, like, you probably would have came to that conclusion eventually of, you know, sourcing from colleges and universities. Like, that's where you're getting the best and the brightest, like cultivating them from the ground up. But you're starting, and there's so many HubZone companies that have done that just like you have. And that's helped very successful. You have some businesses that look at the HubZone program as, all right, I need to find this workforce, or they just put people on books, and which you definitely cannot do. You can't just hire somebody and keep them on their books. It's meaningful work. I want to emphasize that to everyone. If you're putting somebody on your books and you're just paying them and you think that that's making you stay in compliance, I can assure you that is not the case. It's got to be meaningful work. And like what your company has done is you created and established a framework of internship program. You're getting really bright students. You're teaching them a trade. So when they graduate, you have a workforce that's already trained up for you. Yeah, and you got a reduced rate, because in college, they didn't really know how much they were worth yet. So it's great. Not that they weren't knowledgeable and great assets to your company. So sourcing from HBCUs, MSIs, and universities, community colleges, all of those are great resources. But another thing to consider is Communities all have workforce development programs. So there's actually resources within your community that will help you pay for employees to work for you. And I realize that probably sounds weird, but you have OJT training. It's all the concept of workforce development, where there is funding that some states and local municipalities have that is dedicated that can assist you with offsetting the cost for bringing a person on, training them. The hope is that if you give someone an opportunity, that that will eventually lead to full-time work. And that was the whole concept with the HubZone program. A lot of times people look at the 40 hours in a work week, 40 hours in a month, because technically a HubZone employee, if they're working 40 hours in a month or more, you can count them towards your HubZone requirement. Now, prior to 2010, it actually used to be a full-time equivalent, meaning that if you had a bunch of part-time employees, SBA aggregated the hours together and then determined what percentage you would need. But that made it a little bit more of difficult for many small businesses that were entering the market because, you know, a lot of times you're having to do a whole lot of work with a lot less resources. So they get down to the 40 hours in a month, but that was based on the premise of like how workforce programs work. Give somebody an opportunity, it can lead to something if you give them a chance. And there's been a stigma. A lot of times I'm on calls with people that call me up and they say, well, I can't meet this 35% or I can't find qualified workers. And they just go on and they're talking, they're generalizing, which I hate because they're not giving specific, oh, they can't do this or they don't have clearances or they can't do these technical things. And I'm sitting here and I just wait. Well, I probably am a little lot snarkier in my conversation, but I'm like, so, you know, you're calling and asking me for help. And I've lived in a HubZone most of my life. I do. And at the time I had a top secret security clearance and it's about expanding it. And that's why the council actually established a workforce program, which I'm eventually hoping like under the support working with MBDA that we can figure out some resources to really get it out there because our workforce program was really just created because I was tired of hearing so many people that were close to me in my community that were really struggling with finding work. We started it with trying to just figure out to get some college kids that really needed internship programs. Cause when you're at a college, that's not, you know, smack dab in a huge area that has a lot of employers, it's really hard to hire those internship programs. So we were like, hey, how do we give a leg up to some of these kids in these more remote regions? And we launched it first at Frostburg State. And we literally had five kids that supported a quantum literacy program. Like they got on with contractors that were working a government contract and like something that would never have been exposed to. And it was life changing for them. But then we expanded it to try to get other workers that really needed some supplemental work or even were just trying to find something because there's a lot of people struggling out there. So if anybody is interested or is in a HubZone area and is really needing work, you can upload your resume for free at our website. It's HC Works for America. And, you know, we encourage you guys to do this. We are not a recruiter or anything. We're not getting any money from it. We are really just trying to find provide a free service for people that need work. Like all we're doing is we're sending it out to people within our network to give you some added exposure. So I don't want to pretend like I'm a recruiting service or anything like that. We've just found that we've been able to help a lot of people out that really need it by giving them exposure to companies in our national network.
That leads me to that question. And I want our listeners to fully know the services that you provide, the support that you give. You mentioned earlier your advocacy group, but there's so much more to that, right? In terms of who should reach out to you, why should they reach out to you, and how can you help them?
And this is a loaded question. So the HubZone Council, the HubZone Contractors National Council was formed in 2000, and we're a member-based organization. So we provide a lot of resources to our members. Like we help connect, we host outreach events, we assist them with navigating the bureaucracy that is government contracting. We help facilitating partnership, and we provide help desk services. And I say that with like maybe air quotes because 90% questions I get have nothing to do with HubZone. It is, hey, I'm trying to facilitate a teaming partnership. I've helped companies with joint ventures. I've helped companies navigating the sole sourcing process. But I don't want to say that we can do everything. I don't like to make promises that I can't keep. But you know, the whole premise of the HubZone Contractors National Council is we are a network of individuals, businesses, large businesses, small business resource partners that work together in order to help these companies become successful. Because realistically, we know that if they succeed, so does their entire community. But absolutely, that is very like centralized around the businesses. After I actually took over the organization in 2018, and I noticed I was always getting calls where companies were saying they were struggling with finding workers. And as somebody that lives in a hub zone and has seen how many people I know are job seekers that are really, really looking for work, I go, well, how do we help connect these individuals? And like before I was in this role, I consulted because I've been working with government contractors for almost 15 years. So sometimes I would connect and be like, hey, I know this person, maybe they can help you out or something. And I realized that I was able to help a lot of my friends. And, you know, we sat back and we thought about it. We're like, is there something that we could help some people in some other regions? So we created a 501c3 that is dedicated to just our like education and outreach as it relates to job creation. So the website that I mentioned, the HCWorks, and it's foramerica.com. It has an ability where companies can post job postings for free. You can just, you know, post them up there. There's a resume database where we vet it, because a lot of times we need to make sure that people know what kind of documentation that they're going to confirm residency. And we have it broken down by core industries. So we have either college students, and then we break it down to the curriculum, because we want to do our best to try to match kids.
Right.
Employers that align with what they're wanting to do, because sometimes you just need to know, like, you know, you could be going to school for, I don't know, business, and then you get into this and you're like, oh no, I don't want to do that. So it's like,
no,
it
never happens, right?
Like, never mind, I want to switch. But you don't, a lot of times you don't really know where your passions fall. Like, I wanted to work with animals. I still don't know how I got here, but so that's the component, is that we have different arms. There's a lot of times that it's difficult when I try to explain to people what I do, because it feels like it changes on a daily basis. Mm-hmm. As the Hub Zone is, it's all about community and economic development, and that really touches everything. Like, we're all this big ecosystem, and money flows down from federal contracting. So I find myself in, you know, volunteer programs that are supporting local schools and things, because all of that is, it's all connected. I know sometimes, so yeah, every day it seems to change, but our network is so vast and touches every single industry, that we have individuals that are supporting international programs, that are, you know, working to support the food desert crisis, and that are looking into renewable energy. And that's kind of why I love my program, because I learn something new every day. You know, I'm never bored. Everyone goes, if you're bored, you know, check this out. I was like, well, that is never going to happen.
Yeah, that hasn't happened. Hasn't happened.
But I will absolutely check it out.
Well, Michelle, thank you. I know we're right at time. I really enjoyed our conversation. A lot of folks are going to get a lot out of this discussion today about the Hub Zone program. We're in our firm's in the Hub Zone program. We love the program. It's been very beneficial for us. It also provides a kind of a channel for us to give back to specific communities and be responsible for that, because, like you said, the multiplier effect is a real thing, right? It goes both positive, and it also can go in the other direction. So I appreciate all the work that you do. I want our listeners to be able to get in contact with you. What are ways that, because we're going to post this on the show notes, what's the best way our listeners can get in contact with you and really talk about, you know, their potential location of getting into a Hub Zone, be part of that program?
Absolutely. So we do have all of our information on our website, which is www.hubzonecouncil.org. Or you can call me at 240-442-1787 or email me, and it's michelle.burnett@hubzonecouncil.org. And there's one comment I wanted to let any of my listeners out there that might be from Maryland. As I mentioned, the Hub Zone is a federal contracting program, so it's not recognized on the state. However, we have been trying to get states, and there's been some that have introduced bills. But this year, a couple months ago, we were successful in getting Maryland Public Utility to amend their supplier diversity goals to adopt Hub Zone, which I think could be a game changer, because they position themselves in a lot of these remote regions. So fingers crossed that we're going to see a good return and a lot of jobs created in some of these areas supporting these utility companies. So if you have more questions about that, feel free to reach out. And again, thank you guys. And I apologize if I've just thoroughly confused anyone even further.
No, I think you've enlightened people, including myself. I've actually learned a couple of things here. But thank you so much, Michelle. I know we have this 8A program. I guess the conference is coming up in February, which is also part of the Hub Zone program too. So there's a lot of networking events that you post on your company, your organization's website too. So for our listeners out there, this is a very good group to be involved with. Michelle, as you can tell, has the enthusiasm and what better advocate to have for the Hub Zone program than Michelle. So again, Michelle, thank you for you know, joining us today. And I think our listeners really going to appreciate all the content and the advice and knowledge that you've provided them today. So thank you so much.
Thank you for listening to the Citizen Experience Podcast with your host, Keith Scott. If you're interested in creating a strategic plan that builds a diverse, equitable, and inclusive workforce, please contact us at DEI@klscottassociates.com, or you can call at 404-692-5552. Thank you for joining the conversation.